Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple hops brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Try to feel what that's like, 'cause no one gets to decide. When days don't seem right, just shine, 'cause this life is yours and mine.
On a day like today, when you're walking away, hold your head up so high, 'cause I tell you from here
that you've come so far.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 456. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, what a great show we have for you today. I've been very excited to talk with this gentleman. Che Yu is the new artistic director at Victory Gardens Theater. Victory Gardens is a Tony Award-winning theater company here in the city of Chicago, creating new works generally by a bevy of playwrights that are their artistic ensemble. And Che Yu comes in with experience as not only a playwright, an Asian-American playwright, also an out gay man, and a director. So he is bringing a rich culture and rich lens through which he will be showing Chicago new stories at Victory Gardens. And he starts off with a new play called Ameriville, which has had some productions in New York and is now making its Chicago premiere here. And I'm so excited to sit down with him and talk about his career, his vision, why he wanted to move to Chicago, and what is it about Victory Gardens that sparked an ember that made him throw his hat in the ring and gave him this position. This is really his first stepping out on the boards as a director with Ameriville, and he's got some other exciting projects in the works. Also, we've got a lot going on in GLBT news, some historic news that happened this week. Things are in motion, and many fantastic things for us as a GLBT community in the news. Also, some eyes internationally where we should watch for troubles and where our civil rights are not being honored. And some fun entertainment news as well. And Richard Knight Jr. brings us the Innkeeper Review. It's Kelly McGillis, the out gay now, out lesbian Kelly McGillis. We knew her from Top Gun, and now she's in the Innkeeper many years later. What does Richard Knight Jr. think? Thumbs up, thumbs down, go see it, or stay at home. This and more, all on today's Queercast.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. Proposition 8 is unconstitutional, said a divided federal appeals court panel in San Francisco, February 7th. The highly anticipated ruling also rejected a motion from Proposition 8 proponents to vacate the district court ruling of former Chief Judge Vaughn Walker because he had not disclosed, prior to presiding over Perry v. Schwarzenegger, that he was in a relationship with a man. The court will almost certainly be asked to issue a stay on its ruling pending further appeal. The ruling is a relatively narrow one, and one that would affect only same-sex couples in California, not the entire Ninth Circuit.
The Washington State House of Representatives joined the state Senate February 8th in passing a Freedom to Marry bill that, if signed by the governor, would make Washington the seventh state to end the restriction on marriage for gay and lesbian couples, and, counting the District of Columbia, the fifth to do so through legislative action. The law would take effect in June, but marriage equality opponents are expected to attempt to deny its implementation by forcing it onto the November 2012 ballot.
In Washington, D.C., transgender woman Deani Jones, 22, has died from stab wounds she suffered at a bus stop. She was stabbed in the head February 2nd and taken to the hospital in grave condition.
In Utah, the state Senate has tabled a bill that would ban anti-LGBT discrimination after a 90-minute hearing before a capacity crowd. The Senate Government Operations and Political Subdivisions Committee voted 4-2 to table the bill, terminating its chances to pass this year.
In New Jersey, teenager Madison Galluccio pleaded with the state assembly to let her fathers have the right to be married. Galluccio of North Hallidon said the current laws make her and her family far less than equal. The state's legislature is debating a marriage equality bill. GOP Governor Chris Christie is threatening to veto it.
In Alaska, five former Anchorage mayors have endorsed a ballot measure to extend anti-discrimination protections to LGBT individuals. Anchorage residents will vote on the initiative April 3rd.
Jason Andrews, 28, a star in the gay porn industry, recently pled guilty to first-degree murder in the death of 41-year-old Dennis Scooter Abramson. Abramson was murdered in 2010 in his Tampa area home after he hosted a sex party. Andrews and girlfriend Amanda Logue, an adult film actress who will go on trial for first-degree murder in May, stole $6,000 in cash, a laptop, and a camera. Andrews will receive a life sentence without parole.
In Maryland, parents in a school district were angry after several students were sent home with an anti-gay flyer. The flyer, sent out by parents and friends of ex-gays and gays, PFOX, had the message that no one is born gay and that people can select their sexual orientation.
LGBT smokers are more likely to smoke and a quarter are uncomfortable approaching their doctors for help, says a report from University of Colorado Cancer Center. For more than 70% of the LGBT smokers who were surveyed, quitting was not in their plans. Furthermore, LGBT adults are roughly twice as likely as heterosexual adults to smoke cigarettes.
Openly gay GOP presidential candidate Fred Karger will be on California's June 5th primary ballot. Karger will join Republicans Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul, Rick Santorum, and Buddy Romer in battling for the state's 172 delegates.
Robin Tyler and Diane Olsen, the first same-sex couple to wed in Los Angeles, are divorcing after almost 4 years of marriage. The couple, together for 18 years, were plaintiffs in a California Supreme Court lawsuit that ruled a ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional.
Members of the Minnesota Rabbinical Association signed a statement opposing a November 6th ballot initiative that would prohibit same-sex marriages. The group represents rabbis from 15 congregations from conservative, reform, and Reconstructionist movements. No Orthodox rabbis signed the statement.
Dr. Nan Schaefer and Karen Dixon, a lesbian married couple formerly from Chicago, hosted a $36,000 per person LGBT fundraiser for President Obama's reelection campaign February 9th in their Washington, D.C. home. Chicago Cubs owner Laura Ricketts introduced the president at the event, which raised about $1.4 million.
In Tennessee, the so-called Don't Say Gay bill has been tabled until the week of February 13th. The bill aims to prevent LGBT issues from being mentioned in public schools. Foes fear that the legislation would prevent teachers and others from speaking out against bullying.
The Virginia Senate passed a measure allowing private adoption agencies to deny placements that conflict with their religious or moral beliefs, including opposition to LGBT issues. A 22-18 vote virtually ensures the bill will become law. Republican Governor Bob McDonnell said he will sign the measure if it reaches his desk, and the House of Delegates has passed a similar bill.
In North Carolina, the Greensboro City Council okayed a resolution opposing a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban same-sex marriage in the state. Voters will decide on the measure during the state's presidential primary in May. If approved, the amendment would ban North Carolina from recognizing the relationships of same-sex couples by marriage, civil union, and possibly domestic partnership.
In world news, in a landmark move in India, the Karnataka High Court has appointed C. Anu, a 27-year-old transgender individual, as a Class 4 employee. Anu will join approximately 5,500 workers of the court. Anu is fluent in three languages and is a trained ballet dancer and beautician.
The week of February 6th, the highly controversial anti-gay bill was reintroduced in the Ugandan parliament by conservative MP David Bahati. The current incarnation of the bill drops the death penalty for the crime of aggravated homosexuality, but retains provisions that require citizens to report LGBT people to the proper authorities or face prosecution themselves.
In Russia, St. Petersburg lawmakers approved a bill including fines for advocating same-sex relationships in front of children. The bill effectively prohibits gay pride parades and any other public display or discussions of LGBT issues. It also bans promotion of pedophilia. A third and final reading has been tentatively set for February 15th. After the first reading last November, legislators raised the maximum fines for promoting non-traditional relationships.
In England, Christian guest house owners Peter and Hazel Mary Bowl were ordered to pay damages after refusing to allow gay couple Martin Hall and Stephen Preddy to stay in a double room. The Bowls have challenged a lower court ruling. However, the Court of Appeals ruled against them as well.
In entertainment news, Madonna received generally good reviews for her Super Bowl halftime show. During the show, Madonna was everything from an Egyptian queen to a choir member, and had special guests Nicki Minaj, M.I.A., LMFAO, and CeeLo Green join her. Then on Tuesday, she announced her six-month world tour, which starts May 29th in Tel Aviv. The North American leg will start August 28th in Philadelphia and will visit Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Atlanta, where it ends on November 17th.
The Rosie Show, shot in Chicago, is retooling by cutting staff and moving to a more intimate space as it tries to boost its ratings. The show cut approximately 30 employees and contract workers in the past month. It has moved to a smaller studio and has taken out certain segments of the program.
Out rocker Adam Lambert is replacing the late Freddie Mercury as the lead singer of Queen when the group tours this summer. Mercury died in 1991 of an AIDS-related illness. Lambert's second solo album, Trespassing, is slated to be released in March.
The Ellen DeGeneres-produced comedy starring her wife, Portia de Rossi, is going to pilot on ABC. The show centers on dueling sisters. De Rossi plays one of them, a brilliant woman who is to work for her less successful sibling.
Ryan Murphy, the gay creator of Glee and American Horror Story, revealed that Jessica Lange will return for the second season of American Horror Story. However, 20th Century Fox, which produces the show, said no deal has been made yet. Lange won a Golden Globe and a Screen Actors Guild Award for her role on the show.
Fox pundit Bill O'Reilly has come to Ellen DeGeneres' defense regarding the backlash in her deal with JCPenney. The conservative group 1 Million Moms called for a boycott of the retailer, hiring DeGeneres as a spokeswoman because she's a lesbian. O'Reilly said on his show, "This JCPenney thing is a witch hunt and shouldn't happen."
And Diana Ross is among those receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammys. Ross has received 12 Grammy nods and has had 3 recordings inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Dyke Jr. and here's your Now at the Movies Minute. Both writer-director Ty West's 2009 breakthrough movie The House of the Devil and his latest, The Innkeepers, follow in the traditional path of the old-fashioned horror film rather than the current gross-out shocks of splatter porn. And though I don't think either of these movies is something I'll return to with nearly as much of the anticipatory thrill I get each time I'm prepared to watch The Haunting, The Innocents, or even the more recent Spanish shocker The Orphanage, time is on West's side, and if these two are any indication, he's off to a great start. The Innkeepers takes place during the final days of the Yankee Peddler Inn in Connecticut, a ramshackle hotel housed in an elegant, shabby Victorian mansion that has obviously seen better days, is staffed by two 20-somethings, the laid-back, bookish Luke, played by Pat Healy, and his easily excitable and rather energetic counterpart, Claire, played by Sarah Paxton. The two have heard about the haunted past of the inn, and in between bringing their few remaining guests towels and such, have become amateur ghost hunters. Claire seems particularly enthralled by the ghostly possibilities just waiting to be unearthed, and also is taken in really big with Leanne Rhys-Jones, played with world-weary finesse by out-actor Kelly McGillis, who has checked into the inn. The tough-talking Leanne, a former movie actress turned spiritualist, seems to know there's quote-unquote something amiss at the Yankee Peddler, as do Claire and Luke, and all three surmise it has something to do with the original owner of the place, a jilted bride and long-lost lover. When a mysterious guest, an elderly man, checks in, the slow-moving story, built on character and subtlety up to that point, suddenly bolts towards its conclusion. So West film has the occasional suspenseful surprise. The rewards here are in the long takes as we follow Claire down darkened hallways as she explores the hotel, and the general feeling of unease that permeates the film. West is helped by basically a three-person cast that add nuance to their roles. Healy is especially effective as the droll Luke, and McGillis hasn't had a part this good in years. And it's lovely to see her back in front of the camera, with a measure of her trademark vulnerability intact. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 13th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. The Joffrey Ballet ignites Chicago in winter fire with groundbreaking works by the world's hottest choreographers. William Forsythe in the middle, Someone Elevated, stretches classic ballet to its modern limits. A tribune called Christopher Wheeldon's After the Rain heart-stoppingly beautiful. And don't miss Wayne McGregor's Infra, the United States premiere. The Joffrey Ballet's Winter Fire at Chicago Auditorium Theater now through the 26th. For tickets, visit joffrey.org.
Lifeline Theater continues its 29th anniversary season of Big Stories Up Close with a world premiere adaptation of Hunger, Elise Blackwell's novel about the World War II siege of Leningrad. Hunger runs Thursday through Sunday through March 25th. For tickets and more, visit lifelinetheater.com.
When Claudia left Ian and her old life in adult entertainment, she thought she had found a new start. But when Ian shows up on her doorstep weeks before her wedding to the local youth minister and man of God, everything is thrown into turmoil. Welcome to Hesperia, where everyone has something to hide. Visit writerstheater.org for more. Hesperia is playing at Writers Theater now.
Lily Tomlin is a versatile performer, comedian, writer, social activist. Tomlin brings her iconic monologues and new multimedia aspects to her performance with clips especially compiled to satirize her celebrity and showcase her classic characters in their renowned roles. Two performances at the North Shore Center in Skokie, both on Saturday, February 25th. For tickets to Lily Tomlin, visit northshorecenter.org.
Man Boobs is a new dark comedy by J. Julian Christopher, presented by Pride Films and Plays at Mary's Attic. Starring Michael Hampton and Rick Heinz, and directed by David Zack, Man Boobs is playing now through March 10th. For tickets, visit brownpapertickets.com. Man Boobs is unlike any gay play you have ever seen. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com. Hi, this is Brian Batt of AMC's Mad Men, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Artistic director of the famed Tony Award-winning Victory Gardens Theater here in Chicago. He is a celebrated director, having worked with Jose Rivera, Julia Cho, even Alec Mappa, who we all love, and an award-winning playwright, winning even a Lambda Literary Award for A Language of Their Own. And he's won so many awards in both these areas. He's an Asian-American, openly gay artist who came armed to Chicago this fall to take over Victory Gardens after Denis Zajac's 34 years of directing that company and guiding that company to its status on a national level. But it did herald big change, and we think it's fantastic that we're going to get to know Che a little better by having him here on the podcast, because he has a new show opening and another show coming up during the summer months that if you don't live in the Chicago area and you travel here, maybe you can get to Chicago during the touristy season and catch one of his productions. So welcome, Che, to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And welcome to Chicago. Are you starting to feel a little bit more like a Chicagoan? And are you able to not do all the comparisons of the New York, Chicago, Chicago, New York?
Oh, I never compare, actually. I just love being in a different city all the time. Having been traveling as a director, I kind of love each city's history, anthropology, and I think Chicago's history has been great. You know, just trying to get to learn the city a little bit more. So I love the architecture of the city. I think the fact that, you know, it used to be nothing but a swamp, and out of that, someone created a town and a big old city. Even the fire couldn't help it from changing and building. So I think that's a testament to the tenacity of the citizens.
Mm-hmm. It very much is. I mean, it's the city that works, right? I mean, that's kind of our adage, and it kind of, I have to say, you haven't had to go through one of the worst winters so far, knock on wood, but
I actually have. A few years ago, I was directing a show up in Skokie, and it was a blizzard. It was great. I don't mind snow. I just think the wind is a whole different topic of conversation altogether.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you're pretty close to a windy area, being in Lincoln Park. Those in the suburbs maybe don't understand it quite as much. Tell everybody, where are you from?
I'm originally from Singapore, which is where I was brought up. I was born there until I was about 16, when I saw too many episodes of Charlie's Angels and decided to come to America.
Really? It was Charlie's Angels? Who was your favorite angel?
Oh, you know, so it's Farrah Fawcett. Then she had to die of some cancer recently. It's kind of unfortunate.
Oh, I was such a Jacqueline. I still am such a Jacqueline Smith. I think Jacqueline Smith still to this day may be the most beautiful woman that's ever graced the earth. I love her
so much.
I think you're right. So television was definitely connecting you to America. What is your earliest memory of being in the theater? Because obviously, there is a rich theatrical culture in your own country. So is there a memory from there, and also a more Western memory that connected you to the work of the U.S.?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll try and shorten it as much as I can. I mean, I was basically streamed to do sciences in high school because, you know, if you're smart, you're going to the sciences. If you weren't very smart, you're going to the arts. And I didn't really like being in the sciences. So at some point, I kind of told my dad, you know, there may be a shift in what I want to do. And he was actually very good about saying, well, you have one life. You got to figure out what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So one time, I wasn't was basically watching TV, and the Tony Awards came on, and someone sang What I Did for Love from a Chorus Line, and I thought, my God, I got to get that album. So I got the album for the whole year and imagined what this musical is going to be. So when we finally got to the States, I dragged my folks to see this musical. At the end of the musical, I was completely moved by it, and I basically told my dad, you know, Dad, see what it's all about, you know, the whole musical? And he says, no, the whole musical is not about What I Did for Love. The whole musical is about 32 people trying to get a job. Mm. 16 people got called back, and finally 8 people got the job for being on the Chorus Line, and none of them was Asian.
Yeah. Interesting, so, right? Because she wasn't one of the 8.
Right. So there was one of the philosophies, and he basically said, you go do what you need to do, but just know what you're up against. So in a very strange way, I had a free pass when I came to university here, and I did some theater classes. Mm-hmm. So did some acting, which I thought I wanted to do, to be in musicals, until I realized I wasn't getting the right parts. And then finally, I went up to my professor, and I said, what's going on? And I thought I nailed that audition. He said, you did. You just didn't look the part because this whole play is set in England. Mm. So I said, do you think I'm going to be in The King and I for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, you should think about it. And then the same day I just transferred out. Mm. But I came coming back to the theater because it was a place for me to tell stories. And the notion of what theater meant to me was important. Mm. And I think a rekindling of that was actually in the 80s when I was saving my money to go to New York to see theater. And there was a play that really changed my life. And when I came out of it, I was still still shaking. I still remember that feeling very vividly. It was Larry Kramer's A Normal Heart, because I just felt that plays could actually say who we really are at that very moment. And there's so many injustices that need to happen, and theater is one of the places that can affect that kind of change.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I went to the theater as a playwright.
Wow. We may be separated at birth, Che Yu, and we don't even know it, because The Chorus Line was my first musical as well, and I listened to that, except I was singing Dance 10 Looks 3. Somehow I grew up to be a lesbian. I don't know. I liked Dance 10 Looks 3. I like tits and ass. That's why I grew up to be a lesbian.
I love that, too.
So talk to me about coming out, about your sexual orientation, your identity, and... it sounds like you had support from your family to do what you wanted to do with your career, and that even though they knew it was a tough road, there was a respect for an artistic life. But what about, when did you come out? When did you know you were gay, and how did that factor into your maturation?
I think you kind of know it, especially when you're a teenager, and at some point when you start, clutching the A Chorus Line album,
yeah.
Everywhere you go, it's like a big signal. And my folks are pretty, we're not confrontational, so we're kind of like, okay, I think we're going to go this way now. So yeah. We never talk about it, but they've been completely supportive. So in a very strange way, it's been great. And also, I don't know. I mean, I'm not one to generalize. I think in Asian cultures, we recognize homosexuality, but we don't talk about it, which is very interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's a very strange phenomenon. And even in high school where I was, the kids were not basically bullied as much as they were called names. But then because it's such a matriarchal society, so all the gay boys that I remember were basically running around screaming at straight boys who were in football teams or rugby teams, and then say, if you touch me or you call me a name, I'm going to run around and kiss you. Mm. And they would freak out. It's a very perverse kind of civil rights movement that we had.
Yeah.
And all my friends turned out to be normal, flamboyant, and glamorous still to this very day.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. And we don't talk about it. I'm from the South, and we don't talk about it there either. But I don't know that little boys run across the field telling the football players they're going to kiss them. But maybe they do now in the new era of Glee, they do. But and dance their Beyonce while they kick the football. But they didn't when I was growing up in Tennessee. So tell me when you first heard about this opportunity that Victory Gardens was looking for a new artistic director. And why did that pique your interest?
Well, I've been in the field for many, many years, and as an artist, and I've always, voiced my feelings about what American theater is not doing and should be doing. At some point, someone called my bluff and said, maybe it's time for you to run a theater. Have you thought about that? So I said, I don't know, but let me figure it out. So I went around to some theaters, and they were great theaters, but they weren't the right fit. Mm-hmm. Because if I was going to raise money, I didn't really want to spend my time shaking hands, raising money for A Christmas Carol. I think a lot of people who can do that way better than I can. I love new plays. I love plays that represented America, and I'll just let you know that my philosophy probably is not the most original, but it was definitely affected by George C. Wolfe, artistic director of the Public Theater years back when he had me do my play at the Public Theater. He basically believed that American theater should represent Americans, and they're not one kind, but a pluralistic society. So with that, I always felt more at home when a theater was doing new work and works that represented America. And when Victory Gardens called, I didn't know whether it was the right fit or not. So I went to the website, and when I read the mission statement, I felt like this was the right mission statement. And not only that they have also had a history of doing new work and diversity.
Yes,
so I went up for the job, and it felt like the right
fit. They've been pioneers about that here. I mean, they've other companies about 5 or 6 years ago got called on the table for most of their season being fairly white, and they have always included the disabled and people of color, and obviously new work. So it does sound like it was a good fit. So then the leap of going, okay, that's a good fit, but what that means for my life of leading a company, which has, a group of playwrights, essentially one of the, I don't even know, there's not a ton of companies in the U.S. that are established by having an ensemble of writers, playwrights, and also that it had this long legacy here, and that you would have to be in Chicago. Were any of those things daunting, or were all of those things exciting?
They were exciting because I think there was a lot of talk about change. And I came in to basically look at this version of what this theater is going to be. It's basically 2.0. I'm not going to radically change the theater, but basically to build on what is and to actually bring it up to date in so many ways. For example, we're trying to include younger writers and younger writers of diversity as well to be part of this company. We also are trying to make sure that we're doing plays that not only need to be in a living room and be realistic, but actually more performative. We also want to address issues that actually are of concern to Chicagoans. Mm-hmm. So I think it's building on what Danny Zajac, the founding artistic director, had done. So it's been daunting, but yet exciting at the same time.
So, I mean, this fall, many people saw, I know, because it was such a fantastic production, Sarah Rule's The Vibrator Play, in the next room, The Vibrator Play. You did not direct the first show of the season, but you are directing this show that seems to encompass so many things that you're talking about here, which is Amerville. Talk to me about this production and who you're working with, because I know it's you bringing a new collaboration and all of the things you've just been talking about is kind of what you're laying on the stage for Chicago. Talk to me about Amerville.
Yeah, Amerville is actually created by a hip-hop poetry ensemble called Universes. And they are half Puerto Rican and half Black. And what they are is that they basically use flamenco, dance, song, music, and just create beautiful, beautiful theater pieces. Mm-hmm. And we had a long-standing collaboration for many years. And when they decided to basically say, well, this next project, we want to talk about the state of the nation. And I said, well, that's a huge daunting subject.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can find a way to use an entree, find an entree into this. And then at the same time, Katrina happened, and we start talking about how Katrina really never really resolved what is citizenship, because what it really did ultimately is it really showed the flaws of what our country really are, what it stood for.
Yeah.
So they basically said, we're going to now see the country through the prism of Katrina and what we should really do, because Katrina may not happen to another city, but another disaster will, and you'll find the same issues of racism, class, poverty, healthcare issues, even civil rights issues that's going to crop up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically got together, worked on this piece, and it was important for us to do this also in the beginning of this year, because this is election year.
Yes.
A lot of stakes and are being built into what's going to be happening in the November ballot, and we wanted to start the national conversation earlier and at the top of the year about what it means to have freedom, because freedom isn't free, and we all know this. Sometimes it's even taken away from us right under our nose. So how do we keep having this responsibility of making sure that we have to go out to make a statement and a change this coming November? So we thought Amerville would be the right avenue and vehicle for us to do so.
Now, did Universes create this script, or how do they work to create material? And were you a part of that? And were Chicagoans a part of that? Or is this an existing show that is being brought into Chicago?
It's an existing show that's being brought to Chicago. We had worked on it for like 2 years ago. And what's happening is that because it's so topical and political, it keeps changing. So while they were here, they were interviewing a few people and brought some information into the new piece. So it's ultimately that piece, and I was part of basically there shaping the piece with them. So sometimes you bring a piece of writing to me, and I say, no.
Yeah.
And then they go back and write something again, and it's actually more brilliant than the last time. So it's been a wonderful collaboration.
Do you feel like a writer first and a director second, or where do those sit with you? It's a loaded question,
know,
I know.
Yeah,
I ask you, do you feel Asian or gay first?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know it's a loaded question, but usually people sometimes even have seasons where they feel more inspired by one or the other. You have had a foot in both throughout your career.
I think the playwright is probably the most dominant part of me, even though it's sometimes not the most active part of me. So the wonderful thing about being in this theater is about saying, how do I open this home for other artists who are playwrights?
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of my hallmarks would be, if I were 30 or 20 again, what would I want the theater to say to me and give me so I can do my art? So that's how I'm basically producing.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that, I'm able to hunt down and hopefully find artists who seem to want a home here at Victory Gardens. So, and then directing is fine because it's also part of my DNA, bossing people around. That's kind of cool. And so I think it's negotiable. The whole thing is negotiable. But I think at the core, I look at things as from the playwright's point of view first.
Do you have a routine based on how you write? Do you write even?
Do you write all the time?
Are you inspired all the time by different stories you want to write? You seem so prolific, so.
Well, it's about issues that are important to me, and mm-hmm. I procrastinate because it's the most lonely thing in the world. That's mm-hmm. why I love directing, because mm-hmm. I get to be in the room, I collaborate with wonderful people, and I tell them what to do, and they do it.
Yeah.
So the only problem with writing is I have to get my act together, I have to spend quiet time, but I do love researching too. I think it's about splitting the difference between directing and writing. So yeah. It's been good so far. So, I have no complaints.
What do you think is the state of gay theater? And what do you feel is your responsibility of adding your voice to the gay experience through theater? I mean, The Normal Heart, which you mentioned, was a seminal piece for you to see as a young man. Was just had this hugely critical and commercially successful run. But it seems like, once again, that's a story of our past, a story of our history.
Right.
What is our current story as a community, do you think? And are those stories being told? Is there an audience for those stories? And do you feel like
this is a very loaded question, and I think a very important one. And yeah. I want to stress that this is probably my point of view.
Sure.
I think that's always. I always think that's a place for gay plays, which are from the point of view of coming out and what's it like to be gay. I think those lifestyle gay stories are great, fine and dandy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of other gay stories which are not being told, and I actually get a little impatient with that a little mm-hmm. bit more. For example, lesbian plays are not done as frequently as they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like plays of color are usually never gay plays of color are never usually produced.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, and once every odd few years.
Mm-hmm.
Also plays which are political and plays which are important. For example, gay bullying. I mean, that's a big old issue. Why isn't everyone talking about this? What mm-hmm. about the gay homelessness? What about being old and gay? What about, all these other issues that we still haven't basically resolved in our gay agenda? I think these stories, to me, are important.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it probably had been sparked by my relationship with Larry Kramer's play, because when I had come out and was a young gay man, the notion of AIDS, what it really meant to be gay, and
sure.
what those plays where you see on stage were you're about your existence. Your
yes.
existence was threatened. So
yes.
I feel like there's still a lot of issues that we can still appreciate and still do. But I also feel like, gay theaters are slowly dissipating too. Very few are actually doing the job. And I think one of the best gay theater companies is right in our neighborhood called About Face,
mm-hmm.
where they do a huge diversity of issues related to the gay experience in this country. And I think Bonnie Metzger is doing a superlative job. We just need to tell more of these stories, because mm-hmm. we are not one group of people. We are actually a universe within a community.
Well, and you have an upcoming piece that you're going to be directing this summer, and I hear Telltale, though I don't know a lot about it, though I do know the original source material, Oedipus El Rey. You'll be directing this summer, which is kind of a Latino retelling of the Oedipus story. Talk to me about this and, how you make this current and fit into your, into the mission that you're trying to do of telling, the stories that are here in our response to our world here and now.
Right. When I had come into Victory Gardens, they said that I had a free slot. One slot was given to me. When I was here in July, I began reading and encountering a lot of stories about gang violence in Chicago. And I thought this was a great opportunity for me to try and address the issues of gang violence in the theater. And I come across Luis Alfaro, a MacArthur genius, also a wonderful gay poet, activist, and playwright, also a good friend of mine. And he and I have been wanting to work on Oedipus, and I thought this is the perfect opportunity for us to tell the story.
Mm.
Now, Oedipus is basically, the Oedipus story, but everything that's in Oedipus that you have not been seeing but been told will all be activated and dramatized in this version. It's also talking about the notion of what fate is. You know, are you fated to be in a gang? Mm-hmm. When you're in the prison system, why are you always fated to go back? So right. The notion of fate is very different in this play, and it's well discussed. And we're also trying to bring some anti-violence programs to surround, you know, the issue of this play. So in a very strange way, it's a very sexy, it's a very sensual, very poetical, very humorous, but yet terse and provocative play. Nothing like summer theater, right?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you enjoy provoking, you enjoy challenging, you enjoy theater that people have to sit on the edge of their seat and feel and think, you know, about who they are and what they, you know, you want them to have a response. It doesn't sound like you know exactly what response you want them to have, but you want them to have a response. Is that true?
You know what? I want people to come to theater because I want them to know that they are alive. Mm. I want them to know that, remember the time when you first saw your first theater piece that really gave you that magic?
Mm-hmm.
And for some strange reason, directly or indirectly, we're trying to recreate it again.
Yeah.
So in a very strange way, I want to make sure new generations of audiences feel the same way that we did when we were younger, and also older audiences like all of us to say, that's why we're going back to this thing called the theater, because we want to experience the same thing to make us feel like we're human beings. We want to celebrate that, and we also want to say, we know we are fucked up too.
Yeah.
We have so many things we need to deal with. The fact that we're doing goddamn Trojan Women still after 4,000 years tells me we haven't resolved the notion of how we are dealing with women and how we're dealing with war.
Right.
So these are great reminders, little pinches, little pokes that say that we are human beings. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do as a people to make sure that our children and our grandchildren don't have to do the stuff that we had to deal with when we were dealing with it at the present day and time?
Yeah. Is there you're going to be here in a couple of months announcing next season, which will be really your full first season that you will have been here, but that we can say this is Che's season, you know, and you don't have to release anybody because you can say somebody who's not going to be in that season, or maybe you would be saying somebody who's in that season. But is there a dream collaboration for you, a playwright or an actor or director that you would be like, I want that person in Chicago, or I want that person in this Victory Gardens theater space, or I want to work with that person and I never have? Like, who is the person you haven't worked with that you want to work with?
Cher.
We can help you market
that show.
You Believe
in Love, the musical.
Exactly. The farewell tour.
Yet again, the farewell tour. I think I'm opening a lot of doors, and I just don't know what those doors are going to usher in. And I think there's some definitely wonderful artists that I would like to bring to the theater and get Chicago and its communities to kind of have a relationship with them and their plays. I can also safely say, and without saying anything, that they're going to be two very interesting gay plays, or gay themed plays, that's going to be part of the season.
Excellent.
It's my commitment also to say this is not only, you know, a gay play, but a modern gay play that is beyond universal, but very specific about our experience in Chicago, or living as the new American family. What does it mean to be gay in the 21st century?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're all trying to figure that out a day at a time, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
We are glad that you are trying to mirror and reflect all of that back to us on the stage and under the roof at Victory Gardens. And Merrivel is running now, folks, so you can go and catch that show right now through February 26th, through the end of February. You can easily visit victorygardens.org to get information, show times, buy your tickets, all of that you can do, and we'll have that linked in our show notes. You might want to try to get a season pass, you know, or an opportunity to see many of the different shows that are still going on. We Are Proud to Present is going to be right after Merrivel, and then going into Oedipus El Rey, which we've been talking about. I mean, come on, hot Latin men, I mean, I'm even turned on, and I'm a lesbian. Come on. Tortured, hot Latin men. I mean, it gets better. And then we will look forward to hearing what Victory Gardens is going to be announcing soon and next. I already heard it here, a little bit of a scoop that there will be at least two shows that will be of great interest to our GLBT community, as Che is including us as well in the landscape of America and American theater and the stories that he wants to tell there at Victory Gardens. Che, thanks so much. I hope this is the first of many visits that you will have on our show, and all the best with the Maryville. I hope to catch a performance really soon.
Thank you very much, and for having me too.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you have a great week. Stay warm if you're in Chicago. It's gotten a little blustery, a little cold, a little snowy. But we've had such a lovely January into February that I don't know if I can complain. I don't know if I can. Well, maybe just a little bit here to you guys, because you're my family. Coming up in our next show, Lily Tomlin. Wow, is she fun. I love when she free associates, and I'm sure she will while I sit down and talk to her. And she will tell us lovely stories because, God, she has worked with some talented people, and she's coming to Chicago at the end of this month. So you need to get those tickets now. Do not miss her. She's coming to the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. And go to Victory Gardens. Check out Amerival. It's getting rave reviews. Have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.